It's 2:07 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live from my living room in Palm Springs, California. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang is at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, a judge tomorrow will hear several recall-related lawsuits, including if former mayor of San Diego Kevin Falconer can be called former mayor of San Diego Kevin Falconer.
And Larry Elder's also going to court.
That's right. He wants to throw out that entire law that says you have to provide 5 years of tax returns in order to run for governor.
And that law, of course, was put on the books by the Democratic legislature to try to prevent President Trump from being able to put his name on the ballot. However, the courts threw that part of it out, said it was unconstitutional, that California can't do that in federal races. However, the law stuck for gubernatorial races, and they're using that to keep Larry off the ballot. We're expecting a decision on that case, hopefully soon, and we're going to have Larry on the show on Friday to talk about it, so make sure you tune in for that. Right now, it's a pleasure to welcome to the program the fellow at the Manhattan Institute and author of the book, The War on Cops, which you can get online at Amazon.com. You can follow her on Twitter at HMD@MI. Heather McDonald, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, John. Always a pleasure.
Likewise. You know, you see these stories sometimes about people who go into comas and they're out of it for a long time. And when they come out of the coma, they wake up and the whole world has changed. I kind of feel that way when I went to sleep the other day and I woke up and I was looking at the headlines, I was drinking my coffee, and I saw Nancy Pelosi and others saying, it's Republicans who want to defund the cops. What do you make of all of that?
They are trying to backpedal so quickly from their indisputable anti-cop rhetoric. We are living the experiment of testing their views, and it is proving absolutely disastrous. They have spent years upon years claiming that cops are racist, that they are heavy-handed, that they're a scourge on the minority communities, and as a result, police are backing off from proactive policing, from discretionary policing, and we're living through a daily bloodbath in inner city areas. It is astounding. The press refuses to cover it. Every day there are people being gunned down in these barbaric drive-by shootings. It is all kept completely off stage, but occasionally a glimmer of consciousness trickles out, and the Democrats realize that they have created a monster. And now, preposterously, are saying they're the ones that have always been pro-police. It's absolutely shameless, and there's no way it's going to work.
You know, it's funny, because when you look at cop unions, and it's not just the cops. I would put public safety unions under the same umbrella, the prison guards and others, the district attorneys. It's a weird sort of outlook that they have about government, because on one hand, they are the ones in charge of enforcing the law. They were the ones that need law and order. They want people locked up in prison. They want safe streets. However, it's a labor union, so they want generous pensions. They want pay increases. Sometimes that goes along with bonds or tax increases. So they like to play both sides. In recent years, it seems like the police officer and public safety unions have been realigning politically, whereas they would endorse Democrats in the past, get behind those campaigns. Joe Biden, of course, loves to tell you that the firefighters are behind him, but they're now starting to endorse Republicans regularly, including in the 2020 election, the police officers union endorsed President Trump in that election. Do you see that political realignment playing a role in the open Democratic hostility towards these unions?
It hasn't occurred to me, and I totally agree with you. It has been an absolutely bizarre aspect of police culture, I guess just purely driven by self-interest, even though you would think their self-interest would be in not getting gunned down by thugs. Ambush assaults on police officers are up 91% this year, thanks to this anti-cop rhetoric spewed out by the by the Democrats, not getting shot is presumably of greater importance than having, you know, some cushy retirement clause. But, you know, it really was the first time that the National Association of Police Officers did endorse a Republican in 2020. So I don't know whether the Democrats are saying, well, you know, we need to bring these people back into the fold, or if they're just more worried about the minuscule public awareness of the crime increase. The fact of the matter is, these shootings are going on overwhelmingly in inner city neighborhoods. They're black on black. One's not allowed to talk about black on black crime, but that is the vast majority of crime today. The crime wave is seeping out, mostly through the vehicle of carjackings. They're entering the suburbs. People in Chicago and Philadelphia, Washington D.C., and it'll start happening in L.A. No longer are safe driving their cars, getting their tanks filled. So it's going to continue, and the summer gets worse and worse. But for now, a lot of Americans don't really seem concerned. But to the extent that they are and they get bad press, I think likely that's really what's driving the Democratic effort and Biden's effort to say, oh, no, we want to refund the police. The fact of the matter is, refunding is a hopeless cause. You can say you want to refund all you want. Retirements are through the roof. They're up 46% this year. Resignations are up 18% in a sample of 200 police departments. Nobody in his right mind would want to be a cop today. It's insane, and police officers are telling everyone they know, don't even think about going into this profession. It's the only profession where from day one you are ineradicably deemed a racist. So departments are stripped of personnel. They can't handle the calls that they're getting. They are engaged in triage, even in places not like Los Angeles, with the utterly destructive left-wing prosecutor George Gascon, who has declared a whole bunch of crimes are simply not of interest to him. Essential crimes to be prosecuted, whether it's resisting arrest, trespass, disorderly conduct, drug trafficking, those are essential to maintaining order and preventing higher levels of violence, even in jurisdictions where you don't have left-wing betrayers of their sworn duty to uphold the law. Cops aren't enforcing the low-level crimes anyway because they don't have the personnel for it. So this is a very, very dangerous formula that the Democrats have set up.
If you are Nancy Pelosi or you're Joe Biden and you're going out on TV on a regular basis saying, we don't want to defund the cops, it's the Republicans that want to defund the cops. But you, of course, don't have complete control over what comes out of the mouths of members of your caucus. And you get Rashida Tlaib and you get AOC and you get any number of Democrats who go, oh, no, 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 no. Yeah, we want to defund the cops. We should have done it yesterday. And oh, yeah, the Border Patrol, too. How could you continue to make the argument with a straight face when your caucus continues to go out there and undermine the point that you're making?
Well, I don't even think that the problem of undermining this message is exclusive to the real progressive caucus. I'll believe it when I see it, when Joe Biden has maybe 2 months cold turkey without talking about systemic racism of police officers. If there's a cop shooting tomorrow that the press caricatures as driven by race as opposed to a suspect resisting arrest, I can guarantee you that Biden will return to his favorite conceit, which is that black parents have to worry that their child will be killed by a cop every time he walks out the door, something that is a complete falsehood. Last year, there were about 50 black children, young children, one-year-old, three-year-olds, killed by drive-by shootings while in their bedrooms, in their front porch, back porch, barbecues, jumping on trampolines, you know, driving in cars with their parents. Not one of those black children was killed by a cop. They were all killed by black, often youthful gangbangers who have no self-control, no sense of compassion, have never been socialized. So the Biden narrative is false, but he is wedded to it, and I don't believe he's ever going to separate from it, because by now it's just simply too instinctive.
In Los Angeles County, we had a Republican sheriff for some time who I believe switched to decline the state when he ran countywide, but he was a Republican back when he was the police chief in Long Beach, Sheriff McDonald. He was defeated by a Democrat, Alex Villanueva, who was installed by the LA County Democratic Party. Ever since Sheriff Villanueva put his hand on the Bible, took the oath of office, became sheriff of Los Angeles County, the defund the police crowd, the LA County Board of Supervisors, members of the LA City Council, the mayor, have done everything they could possibly do to alienate this guy, and it sounds like they absolutely scared him straight. And when he talks about crime and punishment, he sounds a whole lot like you, and he sounds like a whole lot like me. This guy is a Latino Democrat elected, and they pushed and pushed and pushed so hard that he's now in a totally different place than where he was when he ran for office. Do you see this as something that could set up a pattern? It could be a domino effect, and we could see other sheriffs and other police chiefs in other parts of the country speaking from the Alex Villanueva book because of what's going on right now with the extreme left wing?
Yeah, I mean, I've just applauded Villanueva's honesty about the Venice boardwalk squalor, the utter degradation of civilized life that we're allowing to happen with our betrayal and jettisoning of sound, basic bourgeois values. It's been a wonderful thing to witness, and we saw during the worst of the COVID hysterical, destructive lockdowns that you've covered so exquisitely, many sheriffs refusing to, you know, saying, I'm not going to enforce these. I'm not going to throw these guys in jail, these restaurants that are simply trying to preserve the fabric of the community and keep employing people and providing, you know, the commerce that is the essence of human life. So generally there is a broad political split between elected sheriffs and appointed police chiefs who tend to be under the thumb of their Democratic mayors. Not that that excuses them. They should say, I know what's best for this community, and that's law enforcement rather than caving. But, you know, I think I'm disappointed in the LAPD chief. You know, I think Moore knows better than what some of the policies he's adopted. And I see Charlie Beck recently, you know, jumped on the policing as a community relations, you know, racism problem. And certainly New York City's police commissioner was absolutely wrong when he disbanded the undercover anti-crime unit that was tasked with getting guns off the street. And the results within 2 weeks of that move, you had shootings up 200%. So, yeah, we'll hope that sheriffs more and more step up and speak the truth and break the taboos about the reality of violent crime in this country, which it is a product of the breakdown of inner city culture.
Well, to that point, we've also seen, in regard to the recall of George Gascon, we've seen any number of cities, including a handful of Latino majority cities like Pico Rivera, their city councils take a vote of no confidence in George Gascon. And every time I look at the newspaper, there's another handful of cities that took that vote. And frequently it's a 5-0 vote or a 4-1 vote. These electeds are all on the same page when it comes to that. Is that a foreshock for an aftershock and an earthquake that's going to happen with Gascon?
Boy, I hope so. You know, the fact we've had some progressive prosecutors reelected, like in Chicago, to my utter amazement. I can't remember if Boudin in San Francisco was up for reelection or if he's just sort of held on. But I hope. I mean, Gascon is furiously fundraising, claiming, you know, that the it's trying to portray his opponents as right-wing white nationalist Trump supporters. And as you say, the demographics, I mean, and please understand, I use that phrase in scare quotes because I think it's a fictional creation of the media by and large. But you know, that's just not the case. At some point, it seems, not as quickly as one would expect, reality does hit. You know, that we haven't really seen that so much always with the black community. Sometimes, you know, there's lots of law-abiding, fantastic people, you know, in inner-city neighborhoods that are desperate and understand the role of law and order. But the voting there hasn't changed to the degree one would expect. But I hope you're right.
Last question before you go. We recently had a primary. We had an election in New York for the mayor's race. We had candidates who wanted to defund the police. We had candidates who wanted to refund the police. One of those candidates ended up winning the Democratic primary. A refund the police candidate won the Republican primary. What can we learn from that race?
Well, there's still a few sane people left in New York City who don't feel that their progressive self-image is the most important thing in their lives. So, you know, there may be hope there. I'm less of a fan of the Democratic primary winner, Eric Adams, than others. One wants to believe in him. He's got a very bad record when it comes to racial demagoguery in the police, but maybe we'll get the good Eric Adams 2.0 revised edition rather than the Eric Adams 1.0, which I'm familiar with. But as far as the public goes, it's definitely a positive sign.
Heather McDonald, author of the book The War on Cops, which you can get online at Amazon.com. If you want to really understand this subject, I highly recommend that you read that book. You can also follow her on Twitter at HMD@MI. Heather McDonald, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks, John. Always a pleasure.
Here with an update on President Joe Biden, Mr. Randy Wang.
Today, President Joe Biden welcomed the Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers to the White House. They celebrated the big Super Bowl win. Tom Brady even had a couple of Joe Biden jokes ready to go.
We had a game in Chicago where I forgot what down it was. I lost track of one down in 21 years of playing, and they started calling me Sleepy Tom. Why would they do that to me?
And President Joe Biden let the Buccaneers hear one of his fabulous tales that goes absolutely nowhere. I think there's supposed to be a joke in here somewhere. You tell me if you can find it.
I went to the University of Delaware to play football, although it didn't do much for my career. I didn't do very well. But, you know, I found out that your career can be embellished a little over time. It's amazing kind of thing. You know, there's an awards banquet that many years later, which is called the Timmy Award, it was held here in Washington. Supreme Court justices and presidents would show up to this big banquet. The University of Delaware football program received the award. And I had a chance to introduce a Hall of Fame coach, the backfield coach when I played. I didn't play much. His name was Tubby Raymond. And so I got up and I said, here's my coach, Tubby Raymond, said some nice things about Tubby. Tubby was really kind of nervous and standing in front of presidents and Supreme Court justices and so many distinguished people. And he went up on to talk about what an incredible ball player I was at the University of Delaware. It was amazing. It was amazing. That's why I decided to run for president. I figured if he was still around, I'd get to be elected president. I would have been an All-American. I could have been big.
That's a story.
He really is Grandpa Simpson, isn't he?
Let's find out.
Like the time I caught the ferry over to Shelbyville, I needed a new heel for my shoe. So I decided to go to Morganville, which is what they call Shelbyville in those days. So I tied an onion to my belt, which was the style at the time. Now, to take the ferry cost a nickel. And in those days, nickels had pictures of bumblebees on them. Give me 5 bees for a quarter, you'd say. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. The important thing was that I had an onion on my belt, which was the style at the time. They didn't have white onions because of the war. The only thing you could get was those big yellow ones.
You know, Irish people are put on the planet to tell stories. That's one of the things that Irish people can do. It goes all the way back to the old days, the Emerald Isle. That's what they're known for. If we have an Irish president who can't tell a story and certainly can't tell a joke, I feel like we've been defrauded.
It's not a joke.
On that we agree, Mr. President. On that we agree. With more on the California recall, here is, or California recalls, I should say, Mr. Randy Wang.
And plural is the important thing there because it's recall season here in the state of California, especially here in Southern California. Of course, it all started with the recall of Governor Gavin Newsom. We've also got a recall that is collecting signatures as we speak for L.A. County District Attorney George Gascon. And there are recalls going on at City Hall for the City Council of Los Angeles. The ones that qualified last week were Nithya Raman. People are collecting signatures for that. She's in Council District 4. Mike Bonnet, of course, is facing another recall effort in Council District 11. And John, what if I told you yet another member of the Los Angeles City Council has just been notified of an effort to recall them?
I don't even know who it is, but I can already tell you they deserve it.
Well, he's a brand new member of the LA City Council, but he's not necessarily brand new to California government. Former state senator pro tem and former failed candidate for California senator, current CD14 council member Kevin De Leon is now facing a possible recall effort. Five voters in the Eagle Rock area have had enough with this guy and have filed with the city clerk their intent to recall him.
Well, he definitely deserves it. And I've never met that guy in person, but I can tell you, looking at his posts on social media, every single picture that guy posts of himself, he looks wasted.
Well, you'd have to be to work at City Hall every day.
Do we have the sound of him trying to do the Pledge of Allegiance?
Oh, yes, we do.
Madam President, today is Tuesday and time for the flag salute.
Mr. De Leon, can you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning?
Thank you very much, Madam President. It would be an honor. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America under invincible. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. For which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Might be the greatest piece of sound that will ever be played this year on the show.
Here's the scary part. This guy's been an assemblyman. He's been a state senator. He's now a city council member. He came very, very, very close to being a U.S. senator representing the state of California, and the guy doesn't know the Pledge of Allegiance.
But it's not his lack of civics that has residents of the Eagle Rock area upset wanting to recall him. No, it's because, like many other people in the LA City Council, Kevin De Leon has been a disaster on the homeless crisis, trying to bring a tiny home project to Eagle Rock and not allowing people, even if they're vaccinated, to have fun at Eagle Rock's many parks, not allowing concerts to happen.
You know, it's interesting. When you talk about government in Los Angeles, you're talking about a few different things. You have the city of Los Angeles, you have the county of Los Angeles, and then you have all the independent municipalities that also exist in the county of Los Angeles. Long Beach, Glendale, Santa Clarita, whatever. The city of Los Angeles, going all the way back to the olden days, has always been a complete and utter disaster. It's never been a healthy functioning government. It was a disaster in the early 2000s. It was a disaster in the 90s. Dick Reardon helped right a little bit of that ship, but as soon as he left, everything went to hell again. It was a complete disaster in the 1980s, the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, go all the way back. And you look to yourself and you say, all right, the city of LA isn't a city in the sense of how you typically think of a city. City of LA goes all the way from San Pedro out to the outskirts of the San Fernando Valley and places like Sunland Tahunga, Woodland Hills, those areas. And it's a city that's pieced together for a whole lot of reasons. You know that LA is connected from San Pedro all the way up to South LA and downtown LA by the 110 freeway. If you're on the 110 freeway, you're technically in the city of Los Angeles. However, if you get off the freeway, you're in a different city.
It's shocking to me that San Pedro and Lancaster are technically in the same city. Two completely different climates, same city.
No. Lancaster is its own independent municipality. Oh,
That's right. That's part of the county.
Yes. However, Granada Hills is in the same city as San Pedro. That is true. And the reason that San Pedro is even a part of the city of Los Angeles is because the city of LA goes, we need a port and we'll take that. The San Fernando Valley is part of the city of Los Angeles because of water and power. Politically speaking, they need to be part of the city to be part of the LA DWP.
And most residents of the Valley know very well that as soon as you cross Hollywood Way on Magnolia from the city of Los Angeles to the city of Burbank, your car stops shaking for some reason.
Yes. So whenever you have a huge city that's Frankenstein together because we need a port or this area needs water and power and they have nothing in common with one another, and you all send your member of the city council to downtown LA and everyone fights over everything and the developers control City Hall along with the labor unions, you end up with a government that just simply doesn't function. And then you have these members of the council who go in there with some sort of ideological crusade in mind. And you take a government that doesn't function under the best of circumstances, and then you take a bunch of communists, and then you've got yourself a real problem.
Alex Villanueva has a great name for them. It's 15 little mini mayors.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's exactly what they are.
I wonder what it was, the last straw that really broke the camel's back, where these residents of, you got to remember, this district is Eagle Rock, El Sereno, Boyle Heights, and some parts of downtown because we completely confuse the way we draw these district lines. What was the thing that really pissed them off? Because, you know, Kevin DeLeon's been a mess since he got into office. Maybe they heard Kevin DeLeon kissing the governor's ass last week and thought this was the weirdest thing they've ever heard and decided this person's not authentic.
The fact that we're able to gather here today in a 90032 right off Huntington Drive.
Well, here's also a little secret about LA city government. And one of the reasons our corrupt little town runs the way that it does. Whenever they redraw the lines, there are certain things that they fight over. They certainly want to make sure their home is in the district they want to represent, so that way they don't have to move.
Unless you're Richard Alarcon.
Yeah, and then you end up in jail. So that's something that's very important. But you also need areas, particularly if you represent a poor area, that is a natural place for you to raise money. So if you represent, for example, East LA, you represent a lot of people who live in poverty. There are a lot of apartment buildings in East LA. There are a lot of people who live below the poverty line. It's very difficult for politicians in that district to raise money from that district, unless you dump downtown LA in there, and then you have all the bankers and lawyers and everyone else who then is technically their offices in your district, and you can go shake them down and you can make sure that they write checks that finance your campaigns. So they all fight over who gets to represent downtown LA. The other place that they all fight over, which Herb Wesson, who was the president of the city council, had in his district for a long time, is they all want Koreatown. Because that's where all the nightclubs are. That's where the nighttime action is. People who are constantly in trouble with code enforcement. They're constantly in trouble with the law. There's all kinds of shady things going on down there with the nightclub business, as has been the case since the beginning of time. And those owners, the owners of those businesses, have to pony up major money to make sure that code enforcement stays out of their face. So they all fight over that part of Los Angeles. And if you have Koreatown, and specifically on Wilshire, and you have, or downtown LA in your district, you have a juice part of town that will make sure that you have no trouble at all raising money for any of your campaigns. And those interests get taken care of in those districts. So if you represent a poor part of LA, if you represent the district that Kevin De Leon represents, he really represents downtown because that's who's paying his bills. If you represent Herb Wesson's district, whoever, I don't even know who represents it now because Herb got termed out, you represent the nightclubs on Wilshire and Koreatown. That's just the way it works. And again, back to my previous point, you end up with a city that doesn't function.